This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. A big news day, but a bigger day for the Damage Report, for the network at large, because it marks not just an appearance of Raivana, but regrettably, at least for the near future, the final appearance of Raivana on our show network. Raivana, welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's very bittersweet because always a wonderful time to be on the show with you. And obviously, I'm looking forward to what's ahead, but I'm going to miss doing the show. I've talked to before in the past about how before I was part of the network, I used to listen to the shows on as a podcast, and everyone can do that with Apple Podcasts.
You can actually rate and review us.
I used to pause it and imagine this is what I would say if I was on the show. And then just to have the last 3 years, the opportunity to actually be on the show and say those things has been like the experience of a lifetime.
I love that you had the experience because that was mine. I listened to it when I was on Air America Radio and as a podcast. And the same thing happened. So you said it's been 3 years. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're moving on to a great new position outside of media. That's one way to put it. The other is that you're dead to me, okay? You turn your back on us and I don't give a damn what you're doing, okay? You are dead to us. Never say the name Raivana again. But anyway, I thought, you know, it would be fun. Okay, sometimes I like to give the audience sort of like prompts of things to send us messages about. Send us messages about Raivana, about your experience of watching and listening to Raivana, maybe favorite memories, well wishes for her as she moves forward. I'd like to see those. Let's pull as many of those as we can for the chat. But seeing as how this is the last show, very excited to have you on. I'm going to give you the occasional opportunity to speak.
Thank you.
To show people what you can do for one last time. And by the way, like, you know, we bring people on the show who aren't like all time media people. Like, you're going to have subject expertise. You could come on the show to talk at some time. I'm just saying. Anyway,
anytime there's a story about employment discrimination,
I don't think that would ever happen in America.
Right. Never. But, never.
Let me Google Tesla and SpaceX. Hold on. Anyway. But anyway, very glad to have you here. I'm sure it's going to be bittersweet, but hopefully a positive experience for the audience as well. And with that, we do have a lot to talk about, everybody. So if you're on a platform where it makes sense, please hit the like button, send us comments, tweets, super chats. I gave you the prompt and now it's on to you. And with that, we do have a lot to talk about. So Raivana, are you ready for one last time to do this thing?
Hell yeah.
Okay, well, in that case, let's do it. Robert Hur, the special counsel who released the full results of an inquiry into President Biden's handling of classified documents, and in so doing, smeared the president over failings in his memory, is now testifying. It's literally going on as we were going live, and it almost immediately got quite contentious. Here's a little sampling of that.
Just to be clear, because so many people have taken your words out of context, your ultimate conclusion was that President Biden could not be charged with a crime because even after your thorough investigation, you could not find sufficient evidence to charge him, correct?
My conclusion was that based on my evaluation of the evidence as a prosecutor.
Don't feel buzz, correct?
I'm sorry, Congressman, I didn't hear your last question.
I said, based on your conclusion, your ultimate conclusion is that President Biden could not be charged with a crime because even after your thorough investigation, you could not find sufficient evidence to charge him. Correct or not correct?
My ultimate conclusion was that criminal charges were not warranted.
Correct. Now let's talk about why. I have limited time, so please, when I say correct or not correct, answer the question.
Damn, Jerry Nadler, calm down, buddy. Like, I know maybe to people who don't follow politics that much, that may not have seemed too contentious, but I think that's the equivalent to me like walking up to Richard Hur and punching him in the face when Nadler gets that fired up. But he was fired up for a reason. Okay, so Robert Hur is out there, okay, and he's talking about the report. He's defending the fact that he, from the point of view of a lot of people, the DOJ needlessly attacked Biden's memory and insulted the guy in his report, which the purpose of which was to be like, we don't have enough evidence that we think we can convict this guy for his handling classified documents. So that's what he's doing. But obviously the different sides have different objectives in how they're gonna handle this. So the Republicans don't care about the evidence part of this. They like to just, they wanna baselessly claim that Joe Biden did at least as bad as what Trump did, if not worse. And much more importantly, he's a doddering old senile fool. And so they wanna focus on that part of the report. They love the little insults that Herr put into the report. And they want to gloss over the whole, there was no cause to try to prosecute him part. So I'm glad that Nadler focused on that. And we're gonna get to a little bit of what was actually revealed today about Biden's memory issues, the parts of what Herr had said previously that seemed to be true and the parts that seemed to be at least exaggerations of what actually happened in the interviews. But before we get to that, Rivana, what do you think?
Yeah, so I felt like the questioning there from Nadler was unnecessarily contentious, particularly when, you know, what they're trying to do is get sound bites that they can play on MSNBC, that they can play on CNN, that they can try to get viral on social media to show exactly what you were saying that they're trying to point out, that he didn't think that charges were warranted, that the evidence didn't suggest that he had committed a crime, and definitely not a crime on the scale of what Donald Trump did. So you should not want to seem like you're arguing with the person. You should want to make it seem more conversational. Obviously, the prosecutor was appointed to that position, and you know he doesn't have the same political aligning as Nadler in the Democratic Party. But you don't want to make it seem like you're fighting him to get him to say that. That was his conclusion. That was what he wrote in his report. That was what he believed. So you should be able to. And you know, attorneys don't like to answer questions with one word. So if you let him explain his thought process and get the essentially the same answer, just a little bit more drawn out, it's still going to prove your point. But you know, I think it is important to sort of, you know, and obviously I'm no fan of Joe Biden, but to sort of hammer home that this is not comparable to what Donald Trump did. Yeah. It is not even in the same realm of or universe in what Donald Trump did.
And look, no reasonable person believes that it is.
Right.
There are people who can see the differences, and there are people who don't care about the differences, so they imply there are no differences. No Republican like weighed the evidence and looked at all, and then they're like, you know what? These are equally troubling, because all of the people who are like, Biden did all of this on purpose. He wanted to buff his Corvette with nuclear secrets or whatever. None of them think that Trump did anything wrong, to be clear. So all of this is so utterly pointless. I tuned into quite a bit of the testimony live, and dear God, was that a waste of time. I waste a lot of time on YouTube, never like I did in watching this. Jim Jordan is such a pathetic hack. He is like it's not like politicians were ever these noble creatures of virtue and wisdom, and the pundits were just doing their best. None of that has ever been true, but dear God, are people worse than they used to be? And stay tuned, because we're gonna have an example of, I think, a perfect example of that coming up later in this block. But I wanna talk about his memory, because Herr is like, no, it's totally reasonable for me to savage this guy over his memory. And in some cases, perhaps it was, but are you gonna be shocked when you find out that he was kind of being dishonest in his little report about the transcript? So let's see, we have, obviously he made the claim that Biden, quote, did not remember when he was vice president. As evidence in the letter, he quoted Biden as saying, if it was 2013, when did I stop becoming vice president? According to the report, Mr. Biden displayed similar confusion on the second day of questioning, asking, in 2009, am I still vice president? The actual transcript provides context for that. In both of the instances, Mr. Biden said the wrong year, but appeared to recognize that he had misspoken and immediately stopped to seek clarity and orient himself. It's not like Herr was like, what year did you stop being vice president? And Biden was like, I don't know, Jack, here's the deal, I don't know. That's not what it was. He was talking extemporaneously, he stumbled a little bit, and then tried to clarify. And I honestly, like, I know that these people are desperate to, they see all of these mashups of Trump fumbling and bumbling through his speech, and they just want parody. But this is not how memory is tested, okay? If you asked me, John, hey, I know you were a TA at the University of Texas at Austin. What year did you start your position managing the experimental media lab? I don't know. At the very least, I would have to think about it for a while. That's not how memory works. You don't keep everything in your memory, okay? And especially with the fact that elections happen on the year, but then you're sworn in the next year. It's not like this is the most cut and dried thing. And I, like Ravana, am perfectly willing to be critical of Joe Biden when I think that it's merited. But this is buffoonish hackery. That's all that it is. And even when you get to the death of his son, that was like the big bombshell. He doesn't even remember when his son died. He wasn't asked when his son died. He, in conversation, brought it up. And then he said the day that he died, which was left out of the letter, notably. You can see the section of the transcript where he brings it up and then immediately says the month and day when he died. And as I said, when we covered this on the main show, my father passed of cancer many years ago. It was when I was in college. And I could not tell you what year it was, because some things are traumatic and you block them out. You don't fetishize all of the specific granular details of it. That's not how trauma or memory works. And I feel like a lot of people are not even stopping to think about whether they would remember comparable things, because they are so horny to pin this on Joe Biden and his senility. Ravana.
Yeah, I mean, when I was actually reading the full transcript, I immediately jumped to the same thing that you just mentioned. Like, I've been having to track down dates for I've obviously just accepted a new job. They've been asking me, what dates did you start with your previous employer? What was your last day working there? And you know, I could say, God, I don't know, what year did I start? And then sit and think about it and then pull the year out. But the date, they asked me what day I graduated both undergrad and law school. And mind you, I graduated law school less than a year ago. I have no idea what day it was. I don't freaking remember. So I think it was really dishonest. And as I mentioned, obviously he was, he is not nonpartisan, all right? This investigator, this prosecutor, excuse me. It's exactly why he was appointed to do this. But
yes,
but to let it bleed through like this. And now I fully understand, again, no Joe Biden defender, but I understand why he did that press conference after this report came out, because I too would be livid if I was accused of forgetting, when my loved one passed away and I was so deeply misrepresented in the report, that, essentially exonerated me from the wrongdoing that I was accused of, but then had to slide this in. And of course, Joe 100%. Biden, he's old. He's old as hell. Of course, he's experiencing some level of cognitive decline. We've been getting reports of that since he was on the campaign trail, but this was just clearly a misrepresentation of what had actually happened.
100%, yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't Steak Mountain, Snake Mountain, there are snakes on the mountain. It's like, look, if you want cognitive decline, it's coming to a city near you in rally form. And you pointed out, Robert Hur's sort of political inclinations. Look, this is a thing that Democrats do. They take every opportunity to put Republicans in position of power. And they do that. Well, I mean, there's cynical reasons you could say that they do that, but the one that's still kind of cynical is they think that it will reassure the other side that they're being unfair. They're never given any credit for that, by the way. And what do you know? Robert Hur, while doing the ethical thing, which is he's not going to prosecute because there's no evidence, that's the most important thing, uses the opportunity to hit the guy that he doesn't want to be president. And, like even Robert Mueller, a guy who's supposed to have more integrity, like, never got around to like actually interviewing Donald Trump. Like, maybe there are consequences to allowing Republicans to control these incredibly vital things.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
With such a striking contrast, our colleagues have switched over from being impeachment investigators for constitutional high crimes and misdemeanors, which is how this whole thing started, to being amateur memory specialists, giving us their drive-by diagnoses of the President of the United States, whose soaring oratory, powerful historical analysis, and devastating extemporaneous repartee with even the most skilled ninja hecklers of the Freedom Caucus were on full display at the State of the Union address last week for the whole country to see.
That's Jamie Raskin, who doesn't have a lot of time for this testimony. He thinks it's a waste of time because it's a waste of time. It's designed to be a waste of time. The entire thing is an utter clown show, and he is making a mockery of it. But he's going to go even further. He's going to try to remind people of sort of the stakes of all of this that's going on, this political theater. Watch this.
The desperate quest to invent an issue is a distraction from the 91 federal and state federal charges that Donald Trump faces now, his staggering civil court losses in New York, now totaling more than $500 million, and his full-blown embrace and romance with authoritarian dictators and communist tyrants all over the world, from Viktor Orban in Hungary to Vladimir Putin in Russia, the former head of the KGB, to the communist dictator of North Korea. It's not... This, my friends, this is a memory test. But it's not a memory test for President Biden. It's a memory test for all of America. Do we remember fascism? Do we remember Nazism? Do you remember communism and totalitarianism? Because the tyrants and dictators of the world are on the march today. So who wins with this ludicrous, embarrassing spectacle? Orban wins, Putin wins, Xi wins, the tyrants of the world win. They have one more reason to celebrate Donald Trump and his cult followers who've completely lost their way.
So look, I love what Jamie Raskin said. I don't agree with him necessarily always on politics, but he's very forceful and powerful in his speech. And that's just a sampling of what he said. You can go see the full thing. And it was an amazing indictment of this massive waste of time. When Donald Trump can barely string three words together, that we're going to do this entire thing to focus on Joe Biden. And meanwhile, Trump is literally running around hosting authoritarians at his beach club. And you're talking about poisoning the blood of the country and all of this stuff. Like, it's an utter clown show. And then he yields his time and Comer comes on and he's like, so exactly how many people did you interview? And you're talking about his classified doc, like just right back to it. I don't care about all that stuff about like how Donald Trump is clearly in love with multiple dictators, including communist authoritarian leaders. And like, just immediately push it aside. I got my talking points. I got to say my talking points. I want to post this on Twitter later. It's just like that. That interaction is what our politics is these days. You have some people who you may not agree with everything on, but they seem to have their heart in the right place. They understand the stakes of all this. And then you have these ridiculous, like simian performers that are just dancing for peanuts, from social media likes to Donald Trump thinking that they're cool on Truth Social. And that's what our politics is. Ravana, final thoughts go to you.
Making sound bites for peanuts is exactly what they're doing. But you know, it reminds me, you know, it's a little reminiscent of the Ketanji Brown Jackson confirmation hearing, where you would go from actual meaningful questions about her background as a defense attorney, and then it would go to Ted Cruz and he'd be like, so are you a pedophile who's also a terrorist? And that was like, have you read this book? And they hold up some kid's book and like, can you recite it from memory for us, please? Just the absurdity of it. And it is frustrating. It's like a C-SPAN nerd. I'm sure that you are also. There are plenty of hearings where, you know, of course, Katie Porter comes to mind, you know, grilling CEOs of companies and, you know, people who have unjustly enriched themselves. You know, you have, you know, impassioned justice Democrats making speeches about not just conditioning aid to Israel, but ending aid to Israel. And those things never get a modicum of the attention that these ridiculous partisan, a waste of time and taxpayer money, you know, shows get. So it's just disappointing. But of course, you know, these are the things that people tune into. No one actually cares about the meaningful work, as it is being done in Congress. And the meaningful work doesn't get clicks and views on YouTube. So we can't we can't get a lot of focus on that. Instead, we have to get just these ridiculous circus clown performances.
Yeah, and we see it and we think, well, why would, like, I understand that you want this to like go viral, like, but why would anyone like this? This is so clownish, right? This is so cartoonish. But the thing is, the standards just aren't there. They think that these people, they think Jim Jordan is Katie Porter. They think Lauren Boebert is AOC. They think this. It's crazy, but you need to understand that not everybody has the same expectations or standards. You watch a couple minutes of Charlie Kirk and you think, wait, how does this have 10 people who watch it? He's terrible at his job. It's because the standards just aren't the same. There are people who can listen to Ben Shapiro and think he's intelligent, because some people are even stupider. Like, that is a thing that exists in the world. It's a dark reality, but we have to confront it as people.
Do you believe that this trial should happen before the election?
I mean, I think the American people have the right to know the facts that this is not a witch hunt.
That is Brian Butler, a guy who worked for Donald Trump for 20 years. You might have known him as Trump employee number 5, because up until last night, that's what he was identified as in the documentation having to do with Donald Trump's alleged massive theft of classified documents. He's the guy who knows exactly about the theft of those documents because he, according to him, unwittingly participated in the hiding and transport of boxes filled with those documents. And he has some incredibly damning stuff to say about Donald Trump and the other co-conspirators to this crime. But bear in mind, that's not being talked about in DC today, because we're talking about Joe Biden's memory or whatever. But that said, he talks about how they had this truck that was rented. I think it was like an SUV or whatever. I think it was Walton Outa that had it. And he didn't understand why they needed it, because Trump was going on a trip. But generally, Walton Outa and Brian Butler aren't the ones who are like packing up his stuff in an SUV to bring it to the airport. But he said in this case, he ended up putting some of the luggage in there. And then there were, quote, a bunch of boxes. They were the boxes that were in the indictment, the white banker's boxes. That's what I remember loading. So he helped them to load up an SUV with these boxes to get them out of Mar-a-Lago and move them. And apparently this was on the same day that Trump's legal team was talking to the DOJ, which was trying their best to get those documents back. So he was there for it, okay? He saw this. This was not a couple of personal diaries sitting next to a Corvette to be used in a biography or something. This was a willful attempt to evade the recovery of these documents. And what did Trump do with the documents? Well, there was a great question about that.
Were there ever any instances when you were still working there that you witnessed where Trump was, in your view, carelessly throwing around national security information?
You know, this really, you know, stood out to me. But in, I believe it was April of 2021, there was a member, Anthony Pratt, who he was coming, he flew in the night before.
He's an Australian billionaire.
He finishes his meeting with the former president, gets in the car, and his chief of staff says, "How did the meeting go?" Pratt, without saying, just says, "He told me, and it would be, you know, US military, you know, classified information of what he told him about Russian submarines and US submarines." And that's really all I remember hearing. And I went, "What?" You know, I'm thinking this. I'm in the car. I'm like, "Did I just hear that?" So it wasn't like, "Oh, the meeting went well. We talked about it." He went straight to the point. He told me that the U.S. subs and with the Russian subs and, you know, something that would more than likely in my mind be classified.
And he also revealed later in that interview that that Australian billionaire was paying millions of dollars to host events at Mar-a-Lago, far and above what other people were spending on their events. And he was getting something for his money. A couple different things. He was getting beautiful cake, chocolate cake, best cake you've ever seen, and maybe classified details about Russian submarines, because he paid a lot of money. He paid for access, not just to Mar-a-Lago, but to the former president, who once he's there and you're spending money at his place, he just starts babbling about national security details, okay? Not things that are going into an official biography, personal stuff. He is revealing to foreign billionaires classified security information about our military and the military of our greatest adversaries in the world. So it seems like the sort of thing that probably merits a little bit of national conversation. Maybe Jim Jordan, who likes to cosplay that he's concerned about the handling of classified documents, maybe he could at least mention this, because it seems pretty damning. Ravana?
You'd think it would be brought up in a hearing about the handling of classified documents, especially as you pointed out, this is a story that just broke yesterday, and it should be bigger than it seems to be. But of course, we know that the Republicans don't actually care about getting to the heart of any issue. They just want to score cheap political points, and a lot of the Democrats too. But that being said, I do want to say liberal media, I'm sure, will try to make Butler out to be some sort of hero. And I won't deny that, you know, naming himself is, you know, to some extent brave, because he knows that he's going to be the victim of relentless attacks from Trump's MAGA cult fan base, who Anybody who's spoken out against him has felt their ire. But of course, a big part of this was him trying to establish his innocence and state that he didn't actually know what was going on. And we shouldn't make someone out to be a hero who voluntarily worked for Donald Trump for 20 years, of course.
Hold on, Ravana. Okay, I'm not saying he's a hero on the level of like a Captain America, but he's at least a hero on the level of Liz Cheney. Can we at least agree on that? Anyway, I'm kidding.
Right.
Yeah, to me, what matters is that he has this information and he's revealing it to the investigators. He was there for 20 years. He worked with Walt Nada. He worked with Carlos de Oliveira. Like, he understands all the stuff that was going on and he can reveal incredibly damning things. Now, he's revealing it to save his behind. Let's be clear about that. But he is revealing it. So here's another damning one. Apparently, the property manager, Carlos, reveals to Brian Butler about Walt Nauta traveling to Palm Beach in late June 2022, at a time when Nauta and de Oliveira were allegedly interested in deleting surveillance tapes of a storage room where boxes were being kept at the club. Butler recalls that he told him that Nauta would be visiting. Then a day later, de Oliveira warned Butler that Nauta's visit should be kept secret. He told Butler that Nauta was interested in learning about how surveillance footage from the club would be saved. Another oddity to Butler. Because they're deleting the surveillance footage. They're covering up the crimes they committed that were intended to cover up the original crime, which was the massive theft of the classified documents. And let me just say one of the most pointless sentences in American political discourse. Can you imagine if Joe Biden, can you imagine if it was revealed that his that Hunter Biden was going to delete like surveillance footage of the camera that's on the Corvette or something as they unload documents in advance of the raid? Like, this is so comically damning, so comically worse than the stuff that's being discussed literally as we're live right now in the her testimony, that it feels like a dream or like a prank show or something. That this is like, oh, that, yeah, it was a fascinating interview or whatever. Now we're moving on. Let's talk about the fact that Biden stumbled over a year once. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, it just immediately, you know, reading all this information made me think of, you know, there's a fantastic documentary called The Smartest Guys in the Room about Enron and the Enron scandal and the criminal enterprise, so to speak, that they were running. And the name of the documentary is very tongue in cheek because they were idiots and everything they did was very out in the open and they were, you know, blatant about the crimes they were committing and they didn't do a good job covering it up. And that's how so much of the, you know, that's everything about Donald Trump. He's not a criminal mastermind. He's an idiot. I mean, he's live tweeting through his crimes. He's telling anybody who will listen about the crimes he's committing. He's showing national secrets and, you know, highly classified documents to, you know, the likes of Kid Rock. Okay. This is not a guy who's good at covering his tracks. Just like, you know, the people at January 6th literally live streamed themselves committing crimes and then had no defense when they had to show up in court. It's just these guys are not exactly the smartest guys in the room.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And we shouldn't be so surprised. I mean, the dude went decades only experiencing the most minor legal obstacles or consequences. So he commits all sorts of different crimes. And then he starts getting seriously prosecuted. But he's already done so many different crimes that we just have to wade through them all. And this is who he is. He's not a criminal mastermind. He's just a criminal who has brain worms like the sandworms of Arrakis. There's just nothing left of his head. Something, something Don Jr. Spice. I don't know. I'm not good with metaphors. Okay, we're gonna take our first break of the hour, but stick around, a lot more to get to after this. Donald Trump is known for a lot of things, like owing $500 million in his two civil judgments and being an adjudicated rapist. But aside from that, he's also known for nicknames. He loves to give people very clever, subtle, and nuanced nicknames. But now he's giving himself one, and we're gonna evaluate it. He posted this message, which is kind of like human speech. It says, Dean Phillips, who just quit his hapless campaign against crooked Joe Biden, was not very good at his craft politics. In fact, I would say that he was far worse than the Republican challengers to me, with a few exceptions. This is all over the place. I'll give you those names if you like, but I'd rather get down to the serious business. This isn't a live interview, man. This is a social media post. Why are you like prompting? Anyway, for the good of our now failing nation and in order to inform the American people of what is going on in our capital C country, we must immediately have a full scale debate between Crooked Joe and Honest Don. I'm ready to go anytime, any place, except at any of the times and places that the many debates that were held in the Republican primary were going on. I just didn't have time, baby. That's just Honest Don stuff. Other Honest Don stuff includes the 30,573 false or misleading claims that the Washington Post adjudicated over the course of 4 years. And I considered briefly in responding to the Honest Don thing, reminding you of a bunch of the specific ones, and maybe we'll do a bit of that. But honestly, I'm getting old and I want to go to the best one. My favorite Trump lie of all time, which isn't even like a thing he said so much as just a thing I can show you. It's when he drew an extension of the path of a hurricane because he'd said it was going to hit a state that it wasn't. And rather than just admit that he was wrong, he took out a Sharpie, the wrong color Sharpie, by the way. He's not even good at coloring with Sharpies. And he drew onto the path of a hurricane. This is what some men will do rather than getting therapy. And that, Rivana, is Honest Don, who wants to debate Joe Biden. What do you think?
I think it's phenomenal. Thank you for reminding me of that. I mean, there was just so much that happened during the Trump administration. That event had actually entirely escaped my mind. So always happy to be reminded of that kind of nonsense. And hopefully praying, God willing, we will never have to experience another 4 years of that man as the president. But, you know, it's looking more and more like that might happen. I actually think that he's right, that it's important that he and Joe Biden have debates. I think everything else he said is utterly incorrect, particularly referring to himself as Honest Don. But I would hope that, you know, the Biden campaign would be willing to have, you know, those debates. I can see all the arguments they'd make already about, you know, we don't think it's necessary to debate someone who's been accused of so many crimes, someone who's so dishonest, you know, as opposed to the nickname he's given himself. And I can see the argument they would make, but I do think that, you know, I think it's important to remind a lot of the country who Donald Trump is in juxtaposition to Joe Biden, because he's not the current president anymore, Donald Trump. And so a lot of that fear that might have motivated people to go to the polls 4 years ago has subsided, and just remind people the insane, and we're gonna talk later about his plans for Social Security, but, you know, stand next to him and make these arguments, because the last time they debated, it didn't go awful for Joe Biden, I don't think. And like, you know, after the commanding performances that Donald Trump put in 2016, he's definitely not that person anymore. He's a lot less lucid than he was then. I mean, of course, Joe Biden's declined in age since then as well, but I still, you know, after the State of the Union, I think that he'd be capable of having that type of debate. And I won't even like fault Trump for not debating in the primaries, because he knew he was gonna win. So why lower yourself to debate the people who you knew were never gonna beat you? As far as a campaign strategy, it's great. I think as far as democracy goes for this country, not great, which is why I would, you know, encourage the Biden administration, or not the administration, but the campaign to, you know, accept the offer of a debate.
I agree with you there. I'm gonna disagree on a few things. One, yes, as a campaign strategy, the reason I'm gonna knock him for not doing that is because he's a cowardly little whiny baby with no testicles. Right. That's why I'm gonna do it, because you were terrified that you were gonna lose a debate to Puddin'Hands Ron and Tim Scott. That's why I'm gonna knock him, because it's utterly pathetic. The only thing more pathetic is the fact that his base doesn't see it as the cowardice that it is. And the reason he didn't debate is the same reason that he constantly tries to pull out of debates. He doesn't actually have confidence in his ability to debate, because he's not very good at it. Yeah. He was bad at it in 2020. I'm more critical of his 2016 appearances. I think he looked like a deranged stalker, a creepy little weirdo. And I think he really fired up Hillary Clinton's base with some of his misogynistic attacks against her. I think that if he goes up against Biden, he'll say a bunch of insane things and his base will like it. And he will look like a deranged madman compared to Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. He'll make Joe Biden look like your nice old grandpa or whatever. Joe Biden will get a couple of probably factually based slams in against Donald Trump. And I think it'll probably help Biden. And I agree, for the purposes of democracy, you gotta do it. It's a norm. I think that they should do it. They don't seem to be willing to say that they will. So I'm not sure, but I hope that they do. In any event, we need to turn into sort of related issues. This is of Honest Don. By the way, the Honest Don, Crooked Joe and everything. Like, if you're a MAGA person, why doesn't it bother you that he has no respect for you whatsoever? Like, this is like baby shark levels of coming up with names. Like, he thinks he can just put Mama Shark on something and that will totally brainwash you.
Mini
there,
Mike.
Crooked Joe, I'm Honest Don. Do you get it, dummy? It's so utterly insulting, but it doesn't seem to bother them. In any event, let's turn now to this. Interviews with top former Trump aides reveal that Trump is not just a fan of current world dictators. He was also a big admirer of one of the most notorious dictators of the past. And I think you can guess which one I'm talking about. I think you know deep within your soul where this story is going. Former Chief of Staff John Kelly revealed that yes, Trump admired Hitler. We'd already had reason to believe that. The dude used to sleep with a copy of Hitler's speeches next to his bed. But he also apparently said, according to the former Chief of Staff, well, Hitler did some good things. To which I, John Kelly, says, well, what? And he said, well, Hitler rebuilt the economy. But what did he do with that rebuilt economy? He turned it against his own people and against the world. And I said, sir, you can never say anything good about this guy. Nothing. I mean, Mussolini was a great guy in comparison. First of all, you don't need to give credit to Mussolini in criticizing Donald Trump or Hitler. You know, it's too soon for us Italians. But anyway, it's pretty hard to believe he missed the Holocaust and pretty hard to understand how he missed the 400,000 American GIs that were killed in the European theater. But I think it's more, again, the tough guy thing. He would ask about loyalty issues and about how when I point out to him the German generals as a group were not loyal to him, to Adolf Hitler, and in fact tried to assassinate him a few times, he didn't know that. He truly believed when he brought his generals in that we would be loyal, that we would do anything he wanted us to do. So he thinks he rebuilt the economy and that's cool. And John Kelly is like, don't you get that nearly 500,000 American soldiers died? Trump doesn't care. He thinks that soldiers are suckers. They're dummies who are wasting their life on something that Donald Trump would never waste his life on. No one in his family would ever waste their life on. That is 100% what he believes. And nobody should be surprised by this. The dude desperately wants power. He wants unquestioned, unchecked power, which is what every deeply weak man wants. Every man who does not believe that he can truly rally people to his side, that he can truly persuade people, that he can truly win within the system, wants to rig the system so that he can't help but win. That's what weak, broken men do. That's what they do around the world, his best buds, the dictators of various countries, and that's what he wants to do for himself. So look, it's disgusting, it's abhorrent, but nobody should be surprised by this. Rivana, what do you think?
Well, definitely no one should be surprised by this because his admiration of Adolf Hitler has been documented for a long time before he was even president, you know, before he was even running for president. And it is disgusting and horrifying. And truly, you know, there is sort of a movement in the history academia to stop trying to provide, you know, sort of absolve historical figures for their sins in the past, you know, instead of, you know, people will try to contextualize slave owning for the presidents of the United States. And I think everyone should be able to say unambiguously that owning another person is wrong, no matter what year you did it in. And so, but no, even that aside, there was never a point in academia where it was acceptable to provide a nuanced view of Adolf Hitler. I mean, truly, when you imagine the epitome of evil, it is him. So to even be willing to say, oh, well, he was great for the economy and his soldiers loved him.
Yeah.
And then the people continued to work for him after he said these things, I think is also an indictment on all of them.
It is utterly bizarre. Again, he does constantly. He had Orban at Mar-a-Lago and he's like, this guy, what he says goes, he's the boss. He's a dictator. He's not the boss. He's a dictator. What he says goes, because if you don't go, you might go. You might be gone forever. Same for Putin, by the way. You know, people aren't willingly yeeting themselves out of hospital windows. They're given some assistance along the way. And of course, he knows that. And I want to end with another example of this. This is going back a little bit. It's talking about another one of the dictators that he's such a fan of. Take a look at this.
Hey. He's the head of a country, and I mean, he is the strong head. Mm-hmm. Don't let anyone think anything different. Right. He speaks and his people sit up at attention. I want my people to do the same.
He's talking about Kim Jong-un. He's talking about the guy who, like, when his relatives defy him, he has them killed by dogs or has them chained to the ground and then mortars are fired at them and blow them to bits. He murders the people who don't do what he wants. Again, like, it's this period in American politics is so utterly surreal. He can say this. He's been saying this stuff for years. He worships at the feet of dictators. He wants that power. We can have a discussion about whether he's likely to get that power if he gets back in office. We can have that. We can have a debate about how strong the norms are, what the Supreme Court will do. We can do that. But nobody can debate whether he wants it. You can't even debate whether a very significant portion of his base wants him to have it at this point. And meanwhile, we're supposed to pretend that we're not supposed to be horrified by this. That this dude who, like, he loves the idea that, yeah, you just kill people who don't give you what you want. Again, I will never understand how this became so utterly normalized in American society. So we've established that Ray has a new job as a lawyer. We have not yet established whether she's going to be paid enough that she has an office with just vinyls all along one wall and signed basketballs.
Right. Well, it is public interest law, so that should answer anybody's questions about that.
There you go. Okay, well, that said, let's turn from talking about that money to talking about your money, the money that's supposed to be waiting for you when you go to retire. We'll start with this.
Have you changed your outlook on how to handle entitlement, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Mr. President? It seems like something has to be done or else we're going to be stuck at 120% of debt to GDP forever.
So first of all, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting, and in terms of also the theft and the bad management of entitlements, tremendous bad management of entitlements. There's tremendous amounts of things and numbers of things you can do. So I don't, you know, necessarily agree with the statement.
Okay, so that's not great, is it? I mean, if you are on Social Security, if you intend to someday retire, that's not great to hear the guy who was already the president and tried to cut Social Security at the time saying that he plans to do it in the future. And bear in mind, he's not even doing like the nuanced thing where he's like, oh, we're not gonna, it's not about cutting. It's, you know, and it's not about anybody who's on it or likely to be on it. Stupid young people, we'll make them work longer before they can retire. He just straight up said, there's things you can do with cutting. He is so lacking in subtlety or nuance. There's no artifice to that. He's going to cut Social Security. And this is a big change from where he has postured on this topic before. Take a look at this.
And as I said, for many years, I will always protect Medicare and Social Security, which others are not able to do, like Joe Biden. You're not going to have it. It's going to be gone. It's Joe Biden who's destroying them, and he is doing it with a migrant invasion. This migrant invasion is much more dangerous than you think in so many other ways. Do not cut the benefits our seniors worked for and paid for their entire lives. Save Social Security. Don't destroy it. The Democrats are looking to destroy Social Security. We're not going to let them do it.
Okay, that was a strong stance that he apparently does not hold anymore. It was convenient for him in the primary. This is always what Trump does. He takes these populist, quote unquote, populist positions during the primary to make himself look cool in comparison to other Republicans. And he did that this time around, saying Ron DeSantis voted 3 times to cut and destroy Social Security. And then he goes on and he's talking about others that tried to do this. And now he doesn't have to contend with them. And he's right back to his actual position, which is we're going to cut it. That nobody gets to be surprised by this. He did the same thing in 2016. He campaigned on protecting it and then he tried to cut it. That's what his last budget literally did. We'll show you the numbers. And now he's doing the same thing. It reminds me of when Joe Biden talked about the Republicans in the State of the Union cutting Social Security and they all went, "Boo, we wouldn't do that." And he's like, "Oh, that's interesting. You're not planning on doing that." Because they are planning on doing that, Ravana. This is always the way it works. I don't know why people, especially older people who are more close to relying on this, don't understand the game that keeps getting played.
Right, especially to live in the state of Florida and to embrace apparently the messaging of cutting, you know, the most popular entitlement programs that our country offers, things that, you know, have lifted so many elderly people out of poverty. I mean, the reason why we have significantly reduced our rate of elderly people living in poverty in this country. And, you know, from a young age, I was told that, you know, you find a job with a pension or, you know, try to make as much money as possible, because you will not get Social Security. And I'm sort of resigned my, you know, I'll fight for it tooth and nail, but it's sort of been, you know, fed into my generation that we will not get to retire with dignity. And you know, politicians love to say, well, people, the, you know, life expectancy is longer now, but that's not actually an issue for administering these programs, because first of all, life expectancy has gone down a little bit in this country, but life expectancy hasn't gone up because people are living so much longer into their lives. You know, they're living to be 100 or 115 years old. It's because we've reduced infant mortality. So that does not play the same as you should be able to work until you're 70 or 80 years old. In fact, you know, it should be the exact opposite of that then. But, you know, it's just an absurd lie that they use to push their agenda of cutting Social Security, and they have to come at it, you know, from a careful approach, because it has always been referred to as the third rail in politics. It is something that 100%. Is so deeply despised and unpopular, and that's exactly what you were pointing out. Why the Republicans at the State of the Union were like, us? No, no, not us. We would never do that.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. But and I get why they tried to hide it. If we could just show one more graphic, we'll jump to the last graphic. When you ask people, do you oppose cutting Social Security for Americans under 50? So this is actually, this isn't just like in general, like when they try to do the thing where they're like, we're only going to cut it for young people, 82% oppose it. That is maybe the most unified the American people have ever been on a topic, is don't cut it for young people. We want to retire someday. Well, now Donald Trump has provided the Biden campaign all they need to throw that into an ad. In the same way that he brags about killing Roe v. Wade, he's saying there's a lot you can do in terms of cutting. Okay, we'll see how that plays with the older voters. Have fun with that. We need to jump to one last topic to close out our hour, though. So whenever we're ready, let's do this. Political violence has been incredibly and increasingly normalized in America in serious ways, with like terror attacks against people's political opponents, but also in kind of petty, ridiculous ways. Take a look at this. What you're seeing here is people at a Kansas City GOP event. I think I'm supposed to say beating a Biden effigy. I think they're doing more damage to themselves, but to their limited physical ability, they have this effigy of Biden and they're going up and they're punching and kicking it. You see, because they don't like Biden, so they want to hit him. They want to beat him. This is ridiculous and childish. And look, in comparison to Trump supporters sending pipe bombs to their political opponents or shooting up Walmarts or sending bomb threats to synagogues, maybe this isn't super serious. But I don't like how casual the fetishizing of violence against your political opponents has been. Now, they're saying this isn't what it looks like, okay? A martial arts studio set up a dummy to promote their self-defense class, which is a thing that you do at GOP events, I guess. And then someone else came in and put the mask, which they just had laying around, a Biden mask and a Let's Go Brandon shirt, because they're still doing that, by the way. That thing that wasn't clever one or two days into it, they're still doing years later. So it's not us, it was other people who weren't even there that did it. And maybe people don't take this super seriously. Maybe you disagree, Ravana, but just like it's continually feeding this concept that don't you worry, you hang in there and someday you will get to hurt the people that you don't like, or at the very least, you will get to watch other people hurt them.
It is, you know, one aspect of it felt reassuring that I could easily take any of these people in a fight, because that was some weak, that was some weak ass stuff that they displayed. But no, you're exactly right. And we've covered it so many times on this network, the rise in support of political violence, particularly, you know, within Trump supporters, even more so than just members of the Republican Party. They have an inclination towards political violence, and they've been sort of hinting at the idea of civil war for quite some time now. And we'll see the acts of violence that these people are willing to carry out in the name of Donald Trump, even just aside from what happened on January 6th, all the isolated instances of Trump supporters, you know, running armed into FBI buildings to protest them raiding Mar-a-Lago and, you know, all those types, all those instances like that. It does spark fear in my heart, and we should definitely not be encouraging this type of, you know, celebration of violence, especially in a country that is already so goddamn violent.
100%. Yeah, I remember back in the Obama days, there were like shooting ranges that were putting Obama faces on targets and stuff like that. Like, and I'm not saying that there's never this on the other side, but I also can't think of an example of it. Again, I'm sure it happens, but this is their side. They are trained to want violence against those they disagree with. This is not a civil discourse, civil society sort of thing. They see it in QAnon terms. The end goal is that all of the terrible gay commies are going to be lined up on a wall and they're going to be shot. That is the end goal. Some of them aren't there yet. They need to spend another year or two watching Charlie Kirk or being on 4chan, but that is the path of radicalization. And there's a lot of people that are already perfectly comfortable with that. Now, in any event, we need to take our break at the end of the hour. That's all the time we have for the first hour. I want to thank everyone listening to the podcast. Those of you listening live, there's a lot more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.